It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 299, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Matt and I give out our mid-season grades in this episode, and we also preview the East Carolina game. Please give us a win on Saturday. Also, is this tough independent schedule too much for BYU going forward? And is there any chance we go bowling in 2017? This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Get this podcast and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. And find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, where you can also catch our halftime show during the East Carolina game. But you don't have to wait till then. You can listen to us right now. Omaha! 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 Hut! Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Is that for real? That's the introduction.
That's the introduction. It's the introduction, my friend.
So are you calling an audible, or is that just a signal that you yell out? I don't understand what I'm supposed to do.
We're not even going to talk about BYU sports tonight.
I mean, who wants to, right?
We actually are going to talk about BYU sports. I've got it.
Of course we are.
We've got a great tweetback question later on that very topic, but we won't get to that quite yet. But Matt, we've got a, let's jump right in or climb right into the tweetbag.
Tweetbag.
So Matt, John Harrison on Twitter, that's at Toffee Tech, says.
Great, great Twitter handle, by the
nice,
way.
Nice job, John. Are there any good BYU, and he's got quotation marks around this next word, drinking games to make the games more fun to watch? So Matt, what BYU drink? And when we say drinking, what we really mean is Dr. Pepper, right? That's what we're talking about.
Or what about Mountain Dew?
Good Mountain Dew?
I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
Yeah, there you go. Good old Mountain Dew, or maybe some Coke, Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
Now available on campus in its fully caffeinated form. Here's the thing. Matt, here are your drinking games, okay? I've got a couple of them in my head. Tell me what you think.
All right, what do you got?
Number one, anytime a wide receiver is wide open and the ball gets nowhere near him when it's thrown, take a drink. What do you think of that one?
I think you're going to have a heart attack.
All right, I got another one.
Be like the time I accidentally drank 5 Red Bulls in a night.
That's not a good night. What about every time we field a punt or a kickoff, and on the kickoffs we don't get past the 20, and on the punts we don't get more than 5 yards on the return?
That's every single time.
Take a drink. So anyway, he says hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb.
How about this? How about every time on third down a receiver catches the ball just shy of the sticks?
Better. I've got better for that. Every time on third down long, we hand the ball off.
Oh no, a draw. Not a just draw. A handoff, but a
That's
draw.
That's right. A draw to El Bakri.
This got pretty negative pretty fast, yeah, I feel like.
All right, let's go positive. Let's go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, women's volleyball is a rolling.
It's like that. It's like, you know what? When I see a team that's that's playing like this, the song, and this is kind of a Tom Petty tribute, the song Running Down a Dream, when a team gets on a streak. That's the song that captures that for me, and that's the way I feel about this women's volleyball team.
Yeah, they are rolling. So they beat Portland on Gonzaga, swept them, didn't lose a set last week. They've got Pepperdine and LMU, I believe, both on the road this week. Neither of them are great teams, 12-9 and 12-7, respectively. Expect to see when you and I talk again next week, they'll be 21-1 and 10-0 in conference play. So
that's awesome.
Speaking of rolling, women's soccer, Matt, blanked Pacific 2-0 and have now are at .500, 5-5-3. have matches at home against Pepperdine and LMU. So much like you said, Matt, they've turned it around. You were correct.
Good yeah, but not a shocker, right? No. The schedule was front-loaded. Yep. And you know, and this is a good team.
They lost some components from last year, right? Ashley Hatch is now playing professionally and all that stuff.
Killing it, by the way.
Yeah, killing it. Way to go, Ashley Hatch. Which not a shocker by how awesome she was in college. So, boy, this drinking game. This is good. I like this. So Matt,
jacked up on Mountain Dew, Pop.
let's do Cougars in the pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft,
sit down, Goodell.
The Cleveland Browns select. There's 0-6 again. The Browns are, Matt. Will they ever be good?
No, they're the Browns. They're not supposed to be good. It's just the way the universe works.
It's just terrible. They were good when we were kids.
No, they're bad.
They were a couple fumbles away from Super Bowls.
They were always bad. Their mascot's a color. It's bad. There's nothing good. And their helmets are orange. They're not even brown. None of it makes sense.
It was very confusing as a kid.
None of it makes sense. I don't understand it.
So Matt, I think the Packers made a mistake by letting Taysom Hill go.
Yeah.
Hear me out. Best chance for their offense going forward would be reuniting Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams and doing a lot of read option and throw type of offense. Like, you know, the read option where you can also step back and throw and do different things. And now they're just going to be stuck with Mortensen or whatever his bucket is, the QB. Which, by the way, terrible for the league for Rodgers to get hurt. He's the best quarterback. All due respect to Mr. Tom Brady.
But you know who's, like, really excited about it in a respectful sort of way?
In a respectful sort of way?
Well, kind of like, hey, we hate to see a guy like Aaron Rodgers get hurt, but man, this is really good for us.
Who's that?
Every New Orleans Saints fan I've talked to today.
Oh, right. Right. Well, I of course, live in Minnesota Viking land, and they are maybe not as respectfully happy about it. And a good friend of mine is a Bears fan today and was saying, I don't feel that bad about it. I mean, I feel
a little more. The animosity is a little bit different there. There's some regional rivalry.
Yeah.
As it were.
Matt, the only thing I'm really going to talk about the NFL as far as the Patriots are concerned are as far as the NFL is concerned is the Pats. I don't mean the Patriots and how they're doing, though we could talk about that. Kyle Van Noy had 7 tackles, a key sack, 2 sacks to be told to fill it all out. He's second on the team with 42 tackles this year, and he's got 3.5 sacks, all of them in the last 3 games. Matt, this is the Kyle Van Noy that we all thought we would see at the pro level, and it's happening now with the Patriots.
He is awesome. I think he has, and maybe I'm just so excited about it because there's something to be excited about, but he has like all-time great potential.
He is, if you watched any of the highlights from yesterday, because I didn't get to see the game, wasn't on TV in my area, and I don't have NFL Sunday ticket.
You know what? I keep air quotes, forgetting to turn that off. It's two years in a row now I've had to face that down. I really hope Jen isn't listening to the podcast this week.
I don't think either of our wives listen anymore.
Two years in a row, I've had to face that down. Woo! Yeah. Worth it every time. Worth it every time.
He's looking good, and the Patriots defense, while still not great, is improving. So, you know, looking forward to that. And Matt, the other part is, of course, the sad, but it sounds like, you know, things are all right, relatively speaking, that Harvey Longhi and his wife were in a car accident Saturday night, rear-ended by somebody and both hospitalized, but sounds like recoveries are in order and such. So thoughts and prayers with their family, of course.
Yeah, that was scary when those reports first came out because there was so little information. You weren't sure if it was because there wasn't any information or because it was bad, right? That was scary.
Well, you saw her tweet about I'm the passenger.
Yeah, with the emoji with the hand raise.
Yeah.
Yep,
because the Patriots statement said that Harvey Longhi and a passenger
Right. There's like, probably some that was written by a lawyer, clearly.
Yes. And in the middle of the night.
Right. And they're like, let's just be really careful here.
Well, so you can't release she's information. Not
she's not an employee. Yeah. She's not an employee. No, they can't comment on that.
I know exactly what happened. It's probably
comes off as a little weird.
It comes off as, oh, who else was in the car with him? And so I thought her tweet was hilarious. Like, I'm the passenger, look at me.
Oh, the emoji with the person raising their hand, like, hey, over here, that's
well
me.
Well played.
Well done. Well done.
So, Matt, I didn't put this on the agenda, so I'm gonna get you a little bit.
Love it.
Jay Money, Jay Yeomans, friend of the podcast, Jay Yeomans, on his website, had a kind of summary of a bunch of BYU in the pros stuff. So I'm going to briefly walk through some of this. Okay,
throw it out there. What do we got?
Brandon Davies had a 10-point game in a quarterfinal or something? Or am I thinking of somebody else's game? Mika's game? I don't know. Anyway, Davies had some good games in the EuroLeague. Mika had a strong showing as well for VL Pizarro, 14 points. And then James Abul, he's the one that had that were in the playoffs in the French League. So he's averaging 12 points and 7 boards a game, Matt. Abul is. And
look at him getting it done.
They lost
golden years.
They won in the quarterfinals and then lost in the semifinals. But he had good games in both. So, and then Tyler Haas signed with the G League.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting when I saw that. I thought that was an interesting development.
After two years in, now he signed to have a tryout, basically. So let's not get out of hand here. But I mean, he signed a G League contract as a tryout player. Okay, so. So we'll see how that goes. And then Gemma Fredette met Roger Federer. I've heard of him. He's good at tennis.
Yes, he is.
Should we do something?
I don't have anything else to say to that.
Wouldn't you like to see like a battle of the stars where like they play in tennis and then have a 3-point shooting contest?
No, I want to see them in that. What's that obstacle course show where they have the like the big bouncy red balls and the stuff that pops out and hits you?
American Wipeout. Ninja?
Wipeout. Oh, I want to see them. Yeah. No, American Ninja Warrior is way too serious. I want to see them run through a wipeout obstacle course for time.
Mm.
That's what I want to see Roger Federer and Jimmer Fredette do.
Oh, okay. All right. So make that happen, Internet.
Entertainment value there is pretty high.
Make that happen, Internet. What are we even doing this week? I have no idea what this show even is.
I don't even know where that suggestion came from.
I don't know.
It's not like I wrote that down in advance. Like no. I just opened my mouth and it came out.
I have no idea what's going on, Matt. We're 12 minutes in. We're clearly not wanting to talk about BYU football. So you know what we're going to do now?
About everything other than that.
You know what we're going to talk about now? Men's basketball.
All right. Hoops it is.
Our first, not our first, because we already had a tweetback question. So now we've got Mr. Justin Sweeney. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He asked this, really hoping a Haas Childs Bryant trio for hoops will be, what's that emoji? Fire?
Lit? Or fire?
Lit?
I don't know. I listen.
It's flames.
I'm not, my fire? Emoji game is not on fleek. So
well,
I don't.
I still call them emoticons.
I can't translate that into regular English. Yeah, it means what it means.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So he says that it'll be fire.
We'll be fire.
With Celius back and a slimmer Dastrup at 5. So he's saying Haas, Childs, Bryant, Celius, and Dastrup. Okay?
Dastrup looking a little more trim.
Yes, looking a little more trim. And then Emery as the sixth man, hashtag tweetback. Matt, I like that.
Yeah, that's actually a good lineup. I was listening to our last week's show. Was it last week when we went through and we're talking about the different lineups that have been set up?
Was that last week or was that
Vanquish the Foe? Was it Vanquish the Foe article?
Yeah, Vanquish the Foe article.
And I thought there's some really interesting conversation there to be had, right? What does that lineup look like? But I like what Sweeney's laying out here. I mean, it's a pretty good situation.
Did you just say you like what he's laying out?
And it's lit.
And it's lit. It's totally lit. I have no idea what that even means.
It's totally lit.
Got a fire emoji. So are you going to get, now that we're talking about what the kids want, are you going to get an iPhone X?
No. It's iPhone 10, dude. It's not iPhone X.
It's iPhone X.
It's 10. At the announcement thing, they were calling it the 10.
I don't care. You use
Which is weird, because where's the 9? 9. See what I did there? 9 is German for no.
I got what you get. I was just going to move on.
I don't speak German.
No, you don't. You don't.
I don't sprechen the Deutsch.
No, you don't. Do you sprechen no Deutsch?
Ich no sprechen.
Oh, boy. Now we're way off the rails today. But hey, if you're listening this week after that Mississippi State game and 6 straight losses, this is what you'd expect, right?
And we promise we're not going to avoid it forever. We will talk about it because things to talk about.
Yo, there's lots to talk about. So what were we talking about?
Sprechen Sie Deutsch, going back and I don't know.
I don't know.
Are we still on Sweeney's tweet?
Yeah, I think we're still on Sweeney's tweet. Anyway, a week from Wednesday, we're recording this on Monday night, is the Cougar tip-off. Okay.
Yes.
And then but there's no actual games that mean anything for another nearly a month. That first, you know, there's Westminster and Colorado College, but there's really, you know, we're really all eyes are on Saturday, November 11th, with that game against Mississippi Valley State. And then, of course, the game I'm most looking forward to at this point is the Princeton game, which luckily we'll be able to see on NBC Sports Philadelphia. The Ivy League net. So probably listen to that on BYU Radio. Anyway, I'm being really negative, a little cheeky.
You are. You're
a little
negative
punchy.
Nelly tonight. Negative Nancy over there.
Well, how about this? I got called names on Twitter this week, Matt. I got called names. Okay? Are you ready for this?
I'm giving you an understanding nod.
I got called names. Where is it? Jimmy Mack, that's at 24money24 on Twitter, says, "You're a moron." Okay? Because I said, "I keep seeing tweets about BYU giving up." So we're transitioning to football now, Matt. "I don't see that. I see a defense that's giving effort. Losing does not always equal lack of effort." Okay? That's what I said. He responded by saying, "You're a moron. Just watch how many lazy tackles in one series." So, Matt, let me ask you a question. Am I a moron? Okay, that's the wrong question.
Are you narrowing my... do you want me to narrow my response to this particular tweet of yours?
Yes.
Or generally speaking...
I want you to narrow it...
You want me to narrow it down. Yes. Pick the narrow it down. Yes.
I'm picking the narrow it down. So
I don't entirely agree with what you said, but I don't think you're a moron for saying...
So here's my thing, okay? And I'm not accusing this particular fan of this, but yes, I am. We want, as human beings, to take and make qualitative judgments about something that we don't actually have enough information to make a judgment about. Okay? Now, were people not trying as hard in this game? That's highly possible and is almost probable for some of the folks that played, right? You're losing. It's 6 losses in a row. Okay? But I didn't watch that game and think, we're losing because these guys aren't trying hard. Right? I mean, I don't think that's the problem. And the other part is, it's very hard for us as outsiders to ever know what's the internal motivation of another human being is. So honestly, I find some of this stuff by some of the fans to be a little distasteful. Because you're questioning somebody's heart when, quite frankly, we have no way to actually know what's going on inside somebody.
Well, and it comes down, people like to use this phrase, well, this is going to come down to who wants it more. No, it's not.
Stupid.
It's going to come out to who's better.
Yes, and this isn't a sports movie.
You can want it all you want. It doesn't make you better than the other team.
Yes.
There's a handful of things that do make you better than the other team. Your preparation, your coaching, talent. You know, your level of training, your game planning, your coaching, maybe some effort on individual plays. You know, sometimes
I'm not discounting effort, right? Because, you know, there's clearly times where And certainly, you and I played sports growing up. There were times you were more motivated in a given game or day than other times, right?
I think we reached a point in this last game where players knew that the game was over. And it was uncomfortably early in the game.
Yes.
When that started to happen. And that's what he's talking about in this tweet. That's what he sees.
Yeah, but am I a moron for basically saying, I don't think the players gave up. I see no evidence that they gave up. Results do not equal them giving up. I'm sorry, they just don't. And missed tackles, quite frankly, don't either. Highly Correct. Motivated, competitive teams miss tackles. I'm not Right. justifying missing tackles. I just look at this stuff and I'm like, and now there's reports of like BYU fans like tweeting at people, telling them they suck, these players and coaches. This is insane.
Crazy.
And I'll say this right now. If you listen to this podcast and you direct messaged a recruit or a player to tell them that they suck, I don't want you to listen to this podcast. Just turn us off. Like, seriously, like, if that's what you've come to as a fan, like, you need to unplug and go do something else. This is a game, right? I care passionately about it. We talk about it. We have a freaking podcast with 299 episodes, right? Like, I care about it a lot. But
right.
Come on, guys. Like, let's not bash these guys who are trying, I believe, most of whom are trying their best. Yeah, I'm sure there are people that aren't, but most of them are trying their best. So,
listen, and these guys, by and large, care about this more than any of us do.
Yes, most.
So,
of
as
them.
As
yes.
much as this sucks to watch as a fan, these guys live this day in and day out. They've dedicated, in some cases, you know, giant portions of their lives into being good at this, and it's not working right now. The level of frustration that they're feeling, I don't think that, you know, I didn't play Division I sports. I don't know that I can fully understand the level of frustration that these guys are feeling right
now.
No, it's got to be just unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So now, am I excusing the losses? Am I excusing in what I think are in some cases poor execution?
No.
Am I excusing what I think is bad play calling and bad game preparation or in-game adjustments? Am I excusing missed assignments or, in some cases, poor tackling? No. But I don't think that what we're seeing on the field in terms of results is largely to blame on lack of effort. That's not our issue. At times, did I see some things in the Mississippi State game that I felt like were lack of effort? And I texted you about this during the game.
And we disagreed.
I did see that. I don't know. I just think back over the last 10 years. I can think of maybe one time I saw a BYU team where I was like, well, these guys have just quit. I don't even want to watch this game. They're not even trying. I didn't quite get there last Saturday.
That Utah game is what you're talking about. Yeah.
But I didn't quite get there last Saturday. I think what I saw last Saturday was a group of extremely frustrated players.
Well,
they're frustrated.
Let me give you a stat here, okay? The defense did not play well on Saturday, right? There's no way around that. They gave up 6.5 yards, gave up 300 yards on the ground, almost 6 yards a carry, you know, all that stuff, right? 84 plays. Do you know the last time a BYU defense had to face 84 snaps?
I don't, but I have a feeling you've already looked this up.
I have. Utah State, 2015. It was a go fast, go hard year, right? 2015 was?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They faced 88 plays. Guess what? They gave up 5 yards to a mediocre, probably better than mediocre Utah State team that year.
You mean they gave up 5 yards per play? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to a team that probably, on other circumstances, they give up less than that. My point isn't to excuse. The defense didn't play great. 84 plays is too many plays. And you look at how many our defense has played, and people don't want to hear this, but you have to look at it this way, because it's a cumulative season. They are seeing 73 plays a game Last year, they saw 60. You know, one of the worst things about the go fast, go hard, and I think all of us, you and I agreed about this on the podcast, was the toll it took on the defense. Right?
Yeah.
And we are now seeing them play that same level of plays as when we were a go fast, go hard. But the exception is our offense isn't seeing that level of plays, right? Our offense is seeing something a lot less than that. So I don't know. I don't know, Matt. I think we got to cut this defense. I know people don't want to hear this, and I got called for it on Twitter several times. But I think people have got to cut this defense some slack. It's got some issues, but they're dealing with injuries, and they're dealing with, I think, a high level of fatigue after running through those all these P5 offenses.
With nothing and with no backup.
With no backup. They got to do it all because the offense – I mean – heck, Gonwoloku had almost as many return yards on those two interceptions as the offense had all day. You know, I mean, it's not totally true. It's 105 to like 170 or whatever, but that's still pretty close. So, Matt, do you have any takeaway? I don't want to dissect this game. We all watched it. It's painful. I don't really want to spend a lot of time on it. Do you have any takeaways?
I think the offense needs a complete overhaul. The defense, I think, had some things exposed that we probably weren't aware of because the ineptitude on offense was so glaring.
Warner had his worst game,
yeah,
of the season, unfortunately.
I think in some of those cases, some of the defensive players have started pressing because they feel pressure to kind of do the Van Noy versus San Diego State thing. But, I mean, that's a once-in-a-generation type of a performance by a defensive player.
Hey, by the way, San Diego State was being used as an example, Matt, as to why we need to join go back to the Mountain West Conference. Kyle, what's his name on Twitter? The guy for radio in Utah, Gunther, right?
Basically,
making that whole argument. And he did not respond on Saturday when I said, because he said they're going to a New Year's Six game that San Diego State is. Where are they going again? Did I miss something? Are they going to go to a New Year's Six, Matt?
We're talking about the Aztecs.
Yeah. San Diego State. Didn't they lose this weekend to Boise State?
Awkward. Huh.
And they're more relevant than BYU? Actually, that is not factually correct. Right? Like, even with their record. But anyway.
There's a difference between relevance and success in a particular season.
Yeah, I mean, they're having more success
this year. This is arguably the worst season of football we've ever seen out of Provo.
Yes. Yeah, in our lifetimes, that's probably easy to say that. Yes.
And it's easily the worst season at its level of publicity in the history of the program, right? So it is a dark, dark time. So to use this is the barometer for where we are as a program, when we won 9 games last year, beat Mississippi State, the same team that just drummed us out of that stadium last weekend, right? So I'm not ready to, you know, just put everything out in the yard sale and start over, just because this season has just been just epically bad.
Absolutely.
You know, there are some problems here, and there are some things that need to be fixed, but there are things that can be fixed. I mean, it's not like we got to burn the whole place down and rebuild from the
bottom. Get to that in a bit. We'll get to that in a bit. So, Matt, let's give out – oh, before I get there, Paul Andrew Schumann says, hashtag tweetbag, who's going to call Jay Swag Daddy and have him do a ball security clinic for the Cougars? Here's the thing, guys. Young running backs have this problem all the time. This is really common, and it really stinks for us because every possession is so precious for us because we have such a hard time moving the football. And obviously, Tulatau needs to fix this, but I'm not really that worried. I think he's going to be a special player.
Well, I'm going to say a couple of things here. I agree with you. Let me start with that. I believe that he will be a special player. But remember at the beginning of the season where everybody's like, why isn't he on the field? You think maybe he was having this problem in practice?
It's possible. I mean, he was also coming off an injury and was having some conditioning issues, we were told. But yes, I think this is a very likely scenario.
And you just made my second point. He's dropping the football because he's coming off an injury and he's had conditioning issues.
Yeah. And KJ Hall comes back this Saturday, as we've heard. So Jay Drew reported that today. So we'll get some. But my question was, where the freak was Riley Burt? Like, I thought, oh, he must be hurt because he hardly played at the beginning. And then all of a sudden he comes in. I'm like, on these third down and longs, and nothing against Del Bakri, where's Burt?
Where's the draw. Guy? We're running the draw. We don't need those guys for the draw on third and 11.
For the love of Pete. Our leading, third the guy 12. That got the most touches longer. Was El Bakri.
There's something going on in the backfield. There's people are hurt or something. No, that was just
what's,
strange.
What's going
that
on
was weird.
Is they don't. The offensive coaching staff doesn't know how to use players. That's what's going on. Okay, I'm getting super negative again. All right, let's go to talk about something else. Midseason grades.
We are going to get to Don's question.
Yeah,
right?
We'll get to Don's questions here.
Okay, good. Because I have some feelings.
I'm sure you have some feelings. All right, QBs, Matt, A to F. Or actually, let's do this zero to Detmer.
This isn't going
to
be good.
Should we do this zero to Detmer, or should we do it A to F? Let's do it A to F. Let's keep it traditional.
Yeah, we can't do the quarterbacks zero to Detmer. That's gonna get weird.
Okay. All right. QBs. I am going to give them a D.
D minus.
All right. I don't do D minuses. I think once you're a D, there's no reason to do pluses or minuses.
I don't know that I'm going to give out any Fs. But I'd think about it here.
Okay. All right. So Matt, we don't really need to belabor this one. The quarterback play has been absolutely terrible.
And you know what's sad for me?
What's that?
Is I know we had the data on this is so small, but Bo Hodge showed some real promise, didn't he? I just feel bad for the guy.
He's played by far the best this year. Again, you're right. It's a small sample size. He and Coy Detmer threw, kind of close to the same amount of passes now with very different results.
I feel like what we saw from Bo was our glimpse of the future.
Now, I don't think he's coming back.
That's the problem. He's not coming back this year.
No,
You don't take a concussion 2 weeks in a row and go out and put a football helmet on again.
Nope. So anyway, I agree with you, but it's still
not for a season with one win.
It's still a D. So Matt, running backs, I'm going to give them a
D plus.
All right. So you and I disagree with this. I don't think running backs have been our problem. I think the running backs are okay. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa 4.2 yards a carry, Scott Canada 4.6, but we have not had a run of longer than 20 yards except against Portland State. So maybe my grade just went to a C-.
This isn't good. We're not making the honor roll here, kids.
We're not making the honor roll. Okay, wide receivers and tight ends. Should we break that apart or do it as one?
Just do it at one because the tight ends are going to carry the day here. They're totally going to throw us up the curve.
I'm going to say B-.
I'm going with a C. C to C plus.
You are a hard grader.
Thank you, Bushman.
Bushman,
hey, listen,
obviously.
A C is average. And so when I look at a team that's like the 126th best offense, I can't say that they're average or above average in really very many categories.
Yeah.
Now, everybody inflates their grades everywhere here. I'm not a grade inflator, okay? Like maybe somewhere else these guys would be a B. That's fine. Maybe they'd be a B. But to me, I'm saying a C is average. A C isn't a failing grade. A C is average. But okay. No, that's not actually. I know that's not actually true anywhere. When people are coming out of high school with a 4.9 GPA on a scale of 4, like I didn't take that math.
So Bushman leads the team in catches, obviously with 24. He leads the team in targets at 44 targets out of 205 balls thrown.
Man.
Okay. But
guess what, everybody? You just got to guard that guy.
Yeah. And that's been part of the problem. 4 of the 13 interceptions that have been thrown in his direction.
Yeah.
He's had a good year, but unfortunately there's been some issues. And he has the most catches over 20 yards, by the way, as well. 3 catches over 20 yards. I have to say, I think Shumway, Hefo, I think they're okay. You know, I'd be fine if we don't do any more bubble screens to Neil Powell, and I'm not blaming him. I just don't think that's a high percentage play for a gain. Obviously, it's a low risk. But, you know, there's a reason the poor guy has 7.6 yards per catch, because we keep throwing it to him behind the line of scrimmage. But, you know, and obviously Dye's got 9 catches, so we do have a running back here, like we predicted in the preseason, that has some catches. But, you know, but Bo Tanner has caught fewer than half his targets. I mean, there's some issues here, but I'm not blaming that all on the wide receivers. I put a lot of that on the quarterbacks, because there have been some wide open wide receivers in these games, and they were just not even thrown to.
So. Well, but I think, and Bo Tanner, thinking about like players getting misused, he's getting targets on plays that are not the right play for him.
Well, and they did that jet sweep with him on Saturday, and I'm not sure that's the right way to use him either. I'm not sure that's the right way to use him. So anyway, all right, Matt, offensive line, I'm going to give him a C-.
I'm actually at a C- there too.
Okay. Yeah. They're not our biggest problem, but they haven't been great. And the holes in some cases have just not been there in the running game. And then the protection has often been a little spotty.
And they've been at their worst against teams where they were clearly outmatched, yeah. Right? Now, so I don't expect them to come out and be world beaters against LSU.
Now, let's be honest, though. We've got one offensive lineman who's playing at an incredibly high level.
And we have at least two that probably need to be subbed out.
Yes, I think both of those things are true. But our Caroma is as good as advertised, as good as we've seen in the past.
Yep.
So unfortunately, you need more than one playing at that level. Though I think we've got a couple of guys that are playing at a decent level.
I don't know. I just
unfortunately we have some that are not even close.
Listen, I mean some, and I know some of it is miscommunication on play calls, but there have been some. There was at least one play on Saturday where there was an illegal lineman downfield.
Yeah, that one I can't
on
even
a play
fathom.
Where he had no business going down there. Well, it was clearly a pass play.
Something
like
so
this read option into a pass stuff. I get it. I understand why guys get caught downfield on that.
Yep.
And that
yep.
is a gamble you take when you run those types of plays. But when it's not that type of a play for an offensive lineman to get flagged for that, and you get a gain call,
and he was running, clearly running downfield like it was a run.
Yes. He was either ridiculously confused or just really wanted to hit a one particular person.
Yeah, yeah. So that was,
you know, I just
was bizarre.
We've got a couple of tackles. You've had a couple of times where you get a tackle just gets totally
Schoaf is struggling.
He will just ignore the outside rusher in favor of doubling. A defensive
line. I know.
Inside.
But he's also getting beat one-on-one.
Leave the guy totally untouched. It's very weird. And I don't know if I can – you watch it happen, and you want to blame Schoaf, right? You want to say, Schoaf, you don't see this guy? He's running right across your face. You've got to get out there and at least chip him. He's running totally unabated at the quarterback. You're thinking, well, does he think that there's a running back there who's going to pick that up?
Yeah, I've wondered that too. The other thing I've wondered –
it's happened so many times that you're thinking he's got to – he can't be that –
no,
I've
also
see it.
Here's the other thing, right? We happen to have had last year. Now Schoaf didn't play last year, but you had Hill, who is highly mobile. Mangum is quite mobile too, and Hodge even more so than Mangum, somewhere between Hill and Mangum, right? I think some pass protection issues that you and I have been talking about were masked last year because of Hill, right? Because he could just step out of it, right? And Mangum, even with the bad ankle, he was pretty mobile. Like that throw to Hefo, like that's Mangum right there, right? That's what that play is why people believe, myself included, that he can still be a way above average college quarterback. I know we haven't seen a lot of evidence in it in the last year, but I still believe that, and that's the play, right? Like, he moves out of the pocket, evades a rusher, throws on the run and hits the guy in stride. Right?
Listen, we all know that Tanner does best on a rollout, on a moving pocket type of situation. That's just how it's just he just does better in those dynamic type of plays. I don't know what it is.
Get him moving.
You get him moving, and you get direction going in across the defensive backfield, and he'll find an open guy, and he's got great arm strength, you know. But he clearly struggles taking a couple steps back, sitting in the pocket, and making a read and a throw. He's not, you know, and it's just not. It's clearly not where his strength is. He does better in more dynamic types of plays.
His quarterback rating out of the pocket is 109 this year, and in the pocket is 95. Now, neither of those numbers are good, by the way, on the college level. So, but you know, I think statistics can back us up there. Okay, so Matt, overall in the offense, I'm giving him a D.
Okay, I'll settle on a D. That's fine. Okay.
All right. So on the defense, D line, I'm giving them a B minus. Maybe a C plus.
I'm going with a C. I think they've been very average, which is fine.
I think they're above average. I think they've been above average. Not a ton above average, but I think they've been above average. Linebackers, because others have been good too. An injury depleted year, and I'm still giving them a B plus.
I was going to go C plus to B minus here.
Are you serious? Fred Warner. Two words for you, Fred Warner, by himself.
This is above average.
He's
above average.
Oh, stop it! You're such a terrible grader. You're so hard on people. Yeah, you might be right though. I just think this group has been better than above average. I think they've been better than average. But you clearly disagree. How about Fred Warner? Can we just pause for a minute and say...
Oh, man, I'm so glad he's on our team.
He is... He's just amazing. He's so... He's really made the jump this year. I mean, he's always been good, right? So that isn't in any way meant as some type of knock on what he was in the past. But our defense is still, even after the disaster on Saturday, they're ranked 58th overall by Football Outsiders. Now, I know everybody wants to talk about total yards. You can't do that. You can't because of the schedule. We've played a top 25 schedule, right?
Right, yeah. And you definitely can't evaluate individual players or units on the total yards, right? You look at a guy like Fred Warner, and you can't talk about, you know, has he made the leap this year, looking at that statistic. I think here you look at, I mean, the guy's got 56 tackles.
Yeah.
56 tackles.
Yeah, he's been amazing.
And you think about, like, you know, on rollouts, he's knocked down a couple of passes. He's rushed. He has hurried quarterbacks. And I don't see a stat here for that, but I know he's done it. I know that it's a kind of a subjective statistic or whatever, but He's a disruptive player. I think offenses scheme around him.
Yes.
And so, I mean, this is on a different BYU team. I mean, Fred Warner really shine.
Yeah,
there's just
sure.
So many other things going on around this team right now that it's difficult for people to pick that out. But, you know, this is a guy that it's, in my opinion, I mean, he's lived up to billing.
Yes.
As much as the opportunity has been available for him to do so.
Yeah, for sure. So, Matt, cornerbacks, I'm going to give a C.
I kind of want to lump all the defensive backs together.
Okay,
and
you
I'll
can
give
do that.
And I'll give them a C.
Now, I think the safeties have been a little worse than the cornerbacks. So I would like to separate them a little bit. I think the cornerbacks have been average to maybe sometimes above average. I think we've, you know, without getting pressure on the quarterback, you leave these guys on an island. And sometimes in zone coverage where it's like, why aren't they closer or whatever, where it's like, well, eventually, if you give a quarterback enough time against zone, he will find an open wide receiver, right? And even in man-to-man, eventually the offensive guy can move and get away from even a good cover corner, right? So I think Gunwoloku and Warner are fine in man coverage. I really do. I think they're both above average, especially for BYU historically. I think we've got two good cover corners. The problem has been, I think we've given, you know, this was true on Saturday, and it's been true almost every week. We don't put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, so therefore that puts, I think people unfairly go, oh, our defensive backs are terrible again. I don't think they're terrible at all. I think they're average or maybe a little bit above average.
It's a team game, and everybody needs help from everybody else, right? I mean, yeah. The defensive line needs people to be covered so that the quarterback feels some of that pressure, right? Yeah. And it's a symbiotic relationship that they have there, right?
That was great. So, way to go, buddy.
But the other thing I want to say about Gunwoloku is on a team that is maybe, I mean, it definitely in the bottom of turnover margin in college football, this guy's got two interceptions this year. Now, granted, both of them were Saturday, but against a pretty good quarterback, right? And so,
one of them was a great read. The other one was dumb luck. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
But right place at right time happens.
But he caught it. And he caught it, right? But the other one was a tremendous read.
Not everybody's in the right place at the right time.
No. The other one was a tremendous read. Like, he saw the play happening.
It was awesome.
And he broke off where he was, right, and moved to the football. It was fantastic. So, you know, I'm with you. Thank goodness for Gunwoloku. He gave us an opportunity to stay in that game longer than we had any business being in the game. So, Matt, overall on the defense, I give him a C. I think they're average.
I was going to go C+.
I would be okay with that.
I'm not devastated overall by the – I was actually okay with the defense up until last week. But I think the defense – you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier. The defense has reached a point where –
this is a cumulative thing.
We've worn them out.
Yeah. I mean, look at the schedule and the offensive – think of the offensive lines that this
interior has. Think of the offensive lines.
But think of it for a second. No, seriously. Stop being, you know, come on, stick with me here, buddy. We got another 10 minutes. We don't joke on this podcast. We don't tell little one-liners. All right,
a minute. My game face is back on.
Game face on, buddy. LSU, Utah, Wisconsin, not Utah State, Boise State, and Mississippi State. Those are all above average offensive lines. Some of them way above average in the case of Wisconsin and LSU. That takes a toll on that interior group of the defense. And that showed. They were way softer on Saturday than they had been probably since the LSU game, right?
And it's the depth starts to show a little bit. You get to this point of the season against those teams.
Yeah, I mean, we're down several linebackers, right? And I don't think Butch Powell's at 100%. You know, he missed some tackles on Saturday that he typically doesn't miss. Right.
He's definitely not at 100%.
Okay, so coaching, Matt, can we just say it's a D without going into a ton of, you know, F? I don't know. What do you want to call it?
I'm not going to give out any Fs yet.
Okay, D. How's that?
Yeah.
So Don asks a question off Facebook. Is the coaching staff too nice? Don, two, in that case, has two O's. Just, you know, being a social media...
You're not going to get accused of being too nice.
Nope. I've never been accused
really?
Of being too
starting
nice.
To, we're starting to call out grammar and spelling in tweets.
Yeah, it's more of just... Nice. It's not nice. A tweet. It was a Facebook post, technically.
Well, there you go again.
But he said, do they need Lieutenant Worf to come be an assistant? For the 20% of you who get what he's talking about, I don't know if they're too nice.
Well,
I don't know what that means. But
well,
I don't know.
Don would just like to see his old mission companion come back and make the BYU staff.
That's true. I don't know what that means because I don't know. Like, I saw Mullen after the guy had the late hit over on the wide receiver. Do you remember which play I'm talking about?
Yep.
And he came over and Mullen just chewed the guy up. And I see that, and that's how I would be as a coach, right? So I see that, and I see that Mullen doing that. I'm like, yeah! We should do that. But does that really... I don't know if that... You know, to me, most of the coaching isn't done during the game when it comes to motivating players and getting them ready. So I don't know. I don't know if they're too nice or not. I don't know. What do you think?
we've seen a bunch of this on Twitter as well, where people want, and we saw this last year. I feel like we've seen this for several years. People want to see the coaches yell at players who make mistakes, or when they perceive a lack of effort on the part of the players, they want the coaches to, quote, get in their face, or, you know, or yell at them in some fashion, as if that's going to, in the moment, make somebody better at football than they were before they showed up for the game. I don't believe that a coaching staff has to be mean, has to yell at people in order to get it done. There are some people who do it that way. Saban yells a lot. Saban yells at his staff, and he's arguably the best college football coach on the planet today.
Yep.
Right? And he does that. Yes, you see him, you know, but if Lane Kiffin worked for me, I'd probably yell at him too. But, you know, so you see historically, you've seen him do this, but not all coaches do that, and it doesn't necessarily drive results. It's not, you know, people want it, oh, I want to see these guys get mad. They don't need, you shouldn't have to get mad to work your game plan in Division I college football.
Lavelle Edwards didn't yell at people on the sidelines. And he's the best coach we ever had.
It can be extremely businesslike and still be effective. So yes. The yelling and getting angry is not going to fix this problem. No. We have a scheme and execution problem. And yelling at somebody doesn't necessarily increase execution. It can actually make it worse, depending on the situation, right?
Well, so and
Kalani's, I'm not sitting here trying to prescribe to the coaching staff how they need to fix this problem on that level.
Kalani's not going to yell at people in Nieder's Denver, okay? I don't know Tuiaki well enough to know. He doesn't seem like a yeller either. So
I could see Satake yelling at players in practice.
Yes.
Or in a film room. Yes. I don't see him doing it. I don't see him berating, or maybe berating isn't the right word, or in using that type of discipline in game.
I know of a couple of situations from former players who either played with Satake or when he was a graduate assistant, and I've read some other stories of when he was a coach at Utah and Oregon State. He is the type that is more likely to go to a player after a coach has yelled and almost like apologize. That's more his DNA, right? Like, we're in this together, we're a team, and I'm not gonna push you under the bus because you did something wrong. I'm gonna put my arm around you and help you figure out how to do it right. So, and that's, like you said, Saban does it one way, other people, there's a bunch of different ways you can do this and be successful. Like, you look at Dabo Swinney versus Saban versus, you know, Jimbo Fisher versus whoever. Pick your top 10 coaches. Their styles vary massively. So I'm with you. There's not one style to success. If one of these guys was Whittingham and was a yeller, that's okay too, probably, right? If that's who you are, like genuinely who you are.
But it needs to be who you are. You can't just turn it on because your team sucks.
Yeah. I think that's a terrible thing. All right, Matt, we're just going to skip right past all the rest of the coaching stuff. We've talked about it ad nauseum, and we're running out of time. So we're going to answer a tweet bag question about East Carolina.
Tweetbag.
Okay? Now, here's the thing. East Carolina is the best thing that ever happened to us, Matt. You want to know why? They are terrible. Worse than we are.
Oh, they're so bad.
Their defense, according to Football Outsiders, is the worst defense in all of football. 130 out of 130 FBS teams. If we can't get the ball moving on Saturday, we will, by the way. We will. We'll get to our prediction here in a minute. But let's get to Jeremy Ashton's question via email. By the way, if you want to climb on in the tweet bag, you can do it on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout, or you can send us an email like Jeremy did at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, one word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. So Jeremy says, I bought tickets to the BYU East Carolina game this Saturday for myself and my three oldest kids. Three oldest? Who has more than three kids, Matt?
And that would be you and me, actually.
Yes, and weirdos. All right. Just kidding, Jeremy. We're in the boat with you. I have to take every chance I get to watch.
And all of those kids. This boat is sinking.
This boat is sinking. We have overloaded the boat. Yes. Last night we were at dinner with a family, and they have four kids. And I looked around, I'm like, there are 9 kids under the age of 11 in this house. This is insane, right? Like, this is noisy.
Why did you do that? Why did we do that?
Okay, I have to take, this is Jeremy again, I have to take every chance I get to watch BYU play whenever they come close to my home on the East Coast. Sounds familiar? At this point, I don't care that East Carolina is not a good team either this year. I just want to see a game where BYU is competitive and can move the ball on offense. On a scale of zero to Detmer, what are the chances this will be a fun and entertaining way to spend my Saturday evening this week? Matt, zero to Detmer, chances this will be entertaining on Saturday for Jeremy.
Max Hall.
I was gonna say John Beck. So a fairly similar level.
Yeah, and both good chances. I'd be really surprised if our offensive woes continue against East Carolina. Like you said, this is one of the worst, if not the worst, defense in all of the land.
We run for 200 yards.
So I think we got a good chance of putting together some things that make sense from an offensive standpoint here. And when I say make sense, I mean some logical flow, maybe even something that demonstrates some level of offensive identity.
This defense is worse than Portland State's.
And according to you, those Portland State defensive backs are all going to be all pro.
Oh,
so,
give me a break. Two of them were quite good. All right.
I think that you bought their jerseys. I think you wear Portland State jerseys as pajamas.
I might. Well, just not like you're, I don't know, I was going to come back, but I'm tired. And we've been talking too long. You wear a San Diego State jersey to bed as pajamas.
I don't even understand why you would say that.
Yeah. All right, over-under offense, 400 yards.
I'm still going under.
Over.
Let's not lose our minds.
Over. You heard it here first. Over under passing yards for Tanner Mangum, 200 yards.
Over.
I'm going to take the under, and I'll get to that here in a second. And Matt, over under 100 yards rushing for Tolu Tau.
Under.
Over. Big game. They won't be able to tackle him. Why am I talking in this high-pitched voice?
I don't know, but it's making me uncomfortable.
I could do like a little Gaffigan. Anyway, all right. Do you like Gaffigan? Are you a Jim Gaffigan fan?
I love Gaffigan. Oh, Gaffigan is great.
I mean, you've heard his joke about the five kids thing. Not the four kids and the drowning, but the... Have I done that one on the podcast?
You've done the four kids and the drowning, but what's the other one?
The other one is... large families, because he was talking about having five kids, large families are like waterbed stores. They used to be really common, and now they're just weird. Anyway, it's totally true. So Matt, I think Tolu Tau has a big game. Like, big game. So Matt, right now, BYU is favored by 5.5 points. Are you taking BYU or East Carolina on that?
I'm taking BYU.
BYU, easy. Matt, final score prediction for the East Carolina game.
24-10, Cougs.
I am also going, I'm saying 28-14 by the Cougars, and I think a late touchdown, so BYU's in control the whole game. Late touchdown by East Carolina, I mean. So, anyway, all right, Matt, let's talk about the rest of the season. And by the way, we realized that was a very short, I'm not spending time on the best players at East Carolina. Don't care. We're moving on. Matt, my old college roommate, Keith Smith, asked this on Facebook. If you weren't doing this podcast, would you watch any more BYU football the rest of the season? If not, how would you fill that precious time? Matt, we'd both be watching the games.
Right? I can't not watch them. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to me.
Guys, they may lose every... They could lose every game the rest of the season. I'd watch every single one of them.
I went to a sports bar in 2003 when I didn't have TV to watch that terrible 3-0 loss to Utah. You remember that game?
I remember that game. Swirl. I was at it.
Oh, that's right. You were there. I'm sorry.
And I stayed the whole time.
Well, it was close.
It was also freezing.
It looked freezing. I don't even know what I'd do with that free time.
But listen, I did. In full disclosure here, I did come out after that game was over. I came out of the room where I'd been watching the game, and I did say to my wife in a moment of frustration, "I don't even know why I watch this. I don't know why I watch this."
I think I said the same thing, and I almost got in a fight at Buffalo Wild Wings with a guy that was trying to get And he said to the bartender, he's like, can we get this changed off this crappy, stupid Utah BYU game? And I'm sitting there. It's the third quarter by this point. I've watched like 2 hours of football. I'm like, I've been sitting here buying this all this food. Keep it on. There's like 50 TVs in here. Change it to something else, somewhere else. And the other guy, he started yelling at me, and that was my experience sitting there by myself.
That's a little over the top.
Buffalo Wild Wings in West Lafayette, Indiana. Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I've been there. I've watched football games there.
Yeah, you bet you have. So, Matt, this was a question Todd on Twitter, that's at ToddAndD, asked last week and we didn't answer. Do you think this season shows that we shouldn't front-load the schedule with tough teams? Matt, we're running low on time. Maybe we'll talk about this more next week. I would say this. We can't have schedules like this every year. We just can't. We can't.
Listen, okay, it's too much. And I know that this is going to sound like Debbie Downer, and maybe we need to get in more into this later so I can explain. But we need to understand who we are. But if you want to play these teams, you're only going to get these games in the early part of the season. Maybe you don't need five of them.
But some of this is bad luck.
But you're only going to get these teams. You're only going to get these teams in September.
But some of this is bad luck, right? Because next year at Arizona, that they are worse than any of the P5 teams we've played this year. Cal.
And anytime you go to Tucson, it's bad luck.
Yeah. No. This year is bad luck. Next year going to Arizona is way easier than going to playing LSU in Baton Rouge.
I'm just saying, any circumstance where you find yourself in Tucson, Arizona, you've encountered some bad luck.
But we have some easier games earlier. Like, we've got McNeese State in September. But you look at that schedule, though, still, you're at Wisconsin and at Washington in the first month. Yikes, right? But, you know, then Boise is moved towards the back end of the schedule, as is Utah. So it's more evenly distributed, the tough games, right? Like, this year was a perfect storm for a lot of reasons. And
the LSU game was a late add. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Matt. Look at 2019 for a second. Utah at Tennessee, USC, Washington at Toledo. That's your opening five. That is going to be absolute. Like, we don't know exactly how good any of those teams will be, right? Right? Let's assume they're all nearly the same as they are today. That is arguably as tough as the opening of this schedule. And I look at that, and I'm already scared about 2019. Like, next year, I don't think it's as bad as this year. 2019, and like you said, if you want these teams, and the other thing, Holmes talked about this, the scheduling as an independent is really tough. Like, how can you say no to some of these opportunities? But I think he's got to say no to some of them and play, you know, and play New Mexico State in September.
Well, part of it, too, is you've got to get in a situation where you have long-term deals with some of these teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you set yourself up to play Notre Dame for 10 years in a row. You know, Boise State, even 10 years in a row. You need to get a bunch of those where you also you see a team multiple times. That's one of the things about being in a conference that makes a difference.
Right.
The travel's crazy. I mean, we traveled more for a single game than I think Alabama's going to travel all season.
Yep.
Granted, yep. But they play in a conference that's geographically not very, very spread out.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but the scheduling is independent, as you said, and as Tom Holmo has said, it's extremely hard to do.
All right. So last tweet bag question of the night, Nicholas Nelson, that's Dr. Nick on Facebook, said it's often said that making a bowl is important, particularly for young teams, because of the extra practice time. With Bill Connolly projecting only a 7% chance of winning out, because we're not going to beat Fresno State, they're actually pretty decent. How big of a loss is that extra practice time going to be if we don't make a bowl? Matt, I think it's pretty significant.
I think it is less of a big deal if we're going to have a new offensive coordinator next year. Because what are you spending that practice time doing? You're working on an offense that you're not going to be running in 6 months.
Yeah, I still think, especially, I like the extra practice time, and I don't think we'll be as beat up by the end of the year. But here's the thing: we don't have to win out to make a bowl. We only have to, because under the current rules, you just need, you need 6 wins against an FBS, don't you? And we've got one against
Every so many years, you can count that Portland State win. But you can't do, you know, I don't know what the rule is, but you can count it, but then you won't be able to count another one for like 5 years or something.
Somebody will have to,
There's some weird rule there.
I don't remember what it is. But anyway, I don't think we went out, but I think we've got a decent shot of going 5-1. Because the other teams are terrible, too. I know we're terrible, but the other teams are also terrible besides Fresno. So
there's reasonable chances of winning these games that are left. I mean, this isn't like Mississippi State or Wisconsin.
No.
Right? This isn't the same thing.
And even Fresno's nowhere near as good as those teams.
Right. Is Fresno a good team comparatively to where we're at right now? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a team we can't beat? No. That's a winnable game.
Yeah. I mean, Fresno's like maybe the 60th best team in the country. Right? So, you know, we're not talking about great stuff here. Okay, Matt, we'll finish with the college football playoff predictions. So your 4 last week were Bama, Clemson, Penn State, and TCU. Well, obviously Clemson lost. Are you taking them out of your group? I know technically they could still do it.
I feel like I have to.
Okay, so bye-bye Clemson. All right. My group last week was Bama, Clemson, Washington, and Wisconsin. And obviously Clemson and Washington both lost. I'm going to take them both out, though I think Clemson still has a pretty decent shot at making the college football playoff. But, you know, they shouldn't, though. I think they do, and the computers still love them. They lost to Syracuse. They should be out now.
It should be over.
It should be over because any other one-loss team, like Ohio State, their one loss, say they run the table. Oklahoma, better than Syracuse, right?
Yep.
USC, who did they lose to?
Who did USC lose to?
Washington State.
USC hasn't lost. Oh, no, they lost to Washington State.
Washington State, better than Syracuse. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like if they get in based on they won the championship last year, I don't like that, right? It should be based on this season. And this season, now, for all we know, those teams I just talked about are going to lose a second time, right? So Clemson might end up being the best one-loss team left. But anyway, so who are you replacing Clemson with in your list? So you got Bama, Penn State, and TCU. I'm assuming you're leaving those three. Is that a safe assumption?
Bama, Penn State, and TCU, right?
TCU, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and then who's your fourth? Miami? A second Big Ten team?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it's a second Big Ten team. I think you're looking at Miami. I mean, look at Miami's path between now and the end of the season, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They got Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. I think those are both games that they can win. You know, if they run the table.
Well, and then they've got to beat Clemson in the title game, right?
Oh, but that's the nightmare scenario for the ACC.
Yeah.
Is that they go in there and Clemson wins that game.
Yeah, yeah. And Clemson, again, it could be the nightmare scenario. Now,
I think the Big 12 has the same problem. It's a slightly different
look
at it, right? Because they're so stubborn. But, you know, if Oklahoma beats TCU on November 11th, the Big 12 could be staring down the barrel of not making it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see the Big Ten champion is going, so Penn State will go.
Wisconsin, thank you. Wisconsin will go.
So Penn State will be in there. Alabama isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not supremely confident that TCU gets past Oklahoma.
I am.
I'm not really.
I don't know if supremely confident. Well, what about the? You don't have a Pac-12 team either.
Well, you got to see. I feel it's hard. It's just hard to do because there's so many of these one loss teams. But
well, I mean that's the Pac-12's problem, right?
Right.
Because right now Washington was obviously the one that had the path, right? And maybe even Washington State, until this disastrous weekend for the state of Washington and their football teams. But I look at it and I go, and I thought Auburn, you know, as the second SEC team had a shot. We talked about that last week, but that's, of course, they've now got two losses, so that's not going to happen. So the question is, for me, you're putting Miami in. I'm going to, as my fourth team, I'm going to just say I think the Pac-12 sends somebody. And the question is, who is that somebody? And I'm going to go with USC. Even after them, they almost lost to Utah this weekend. I'm going to do Alabama, Wisconsin, TCU, and USC.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, I think that this week is going to tell us a lot about who USC really is, right?
Yep.
I mean, Utah's not a slouch team.
Nope. Good
so
defense.
So I'm not real worried about them having to take that game down to the wire and win on that last play of the game. But I think having to play on the road against Notre Dame will let us know. If they come out of there with a win, I think they're put themselves in a position to do well. But I feel like TCU will beat Oklahoma, and Miami's gonna, you know, they both those tough games they have at home. So I can't get too far away from those two teams. But USC's not far behind them.
Well, what about Georgia?
I think that's gonna come down to one of those. You know, everybody had their shot. They already got their shot, and they didn't do it.
I think it's gonna be very hard if Georgia runs the table and loses to Alabama in the championship game. There's a lot of scenarios here where you could say they're the best one-loss team. And does Clemson deserve another shot when they lost to Syracuse?
Yeah, but if you've got four undefeated teams and Georgia just lost to Alabama.
But you won't. Yeah, yeah. No. In that scenario, no. But what I'm saying is there will not be four undefeated teams, okay? So if there's not four undefeated teams, I'm changing my thing. I'm not doing USC. I'm doing Georgia. One loss, Georgia.
I see a scenario where TCU loses. So they're, right? So TCU loses. They're out. And so you have a bunch of two or three undefeated teams and a bunch of one loss teams. I could see Georgia being the one loss team that gets in that scenario.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm throwing Georgia in. So yours is Bama, Penn State, TCU, and Miami. Mine's Bama, Wisconsin, TCU, and Georgia. So all right. There you go. And it will be different next week.
If I had to rank my top four, those are the four I'd rank today.
Yeah, me too. That's who I'd rank today.
I'm not predicting that as the playoff, but that's who I would rank today.
Yeah. Yeah. If we were picking a playoff today. Yeah, sure. Why not? We're making this up as we go. All right, Matt. Well, we'll be back. I'm not sure next week because I'm on vacation and stuff, so I don't know the timing of next week's podcast. It might be a little later than usual. So anyway, just look for it. We'll let you guys know. Thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Matt, any parting words of wisdom?
Nope.
Nope, me either. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for participating. Loved all the tweet back questions as usual. And we will – oh, and of course, come join us on Facebook for the Facebook Live Halftime Show on Saturday.
All right? That's one of the highlights of my week, to be honest.
It was fun. This last week, we talked about my hair. This week, we talked about your hair.
A lot of weirdness around that.
Did you get a haircut?
I did. Good. Looks great.
Good job, buddy. Good job, you. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.